With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome to the podcast. My name is Howell. This is Jamie.
Hello.
And this is Matthew Wanless, live from London.
Hello.
I'd just like to point out the dynamism that this podcast has started with this week. The energy is back. Yes, the turbine in the hull of this tanker is once again here. And boy, was it missed last time. I mean, it was a good effort. Single hand clap there, but I certainly think the pace was lacking. If we could just spend half an hour on my notes from your podcast, that would be great. The pace was certainly lacking.
Hey, why don't we
I'd like to take issue with some
pre-recording from Jack on the podcast that takes 8 to 12 minutes.
Some quotes of Matthew Wanless. I mean, you may think that I might have taken issue to the statement, Howell looks like if you have shrunken down a bison into Peter Dinklage. But to be honest, I can't disagree with almost every description of me. And they did say he's not fat, but which is quite. I took that, so I've got to thank you for that. I thought it could have been worse, but some of those descriptions really were smashing it. I mean, coming from the two people who essentially, Matthew Wanless is a little bit like the poor man's Matt Berry, if you were to ever look at Matt Berry. He's also got this strange shape, almost like a
That's
chest.
That's pretty much spot on. That's what my agent used to call me.
Really? it's like a chest of drawers with a beard has walked in. And then on the other end of the scale, you've got Jamie, who, I mean, to call somebody else a boiled down Peter Dinklage when he looks like Paul McKenna has been in a microwave and shrunk like a bag of crisps.
I'll have you know, I've actually been compared in the past by my brother's ex-girlfriend to Ryan Gosling.
Oh my God. Yeah. My God.
You know what? I was looking at, when I was listening to the podcast last time, I did think to myself, you know what? I have absolutely no idea what Jamie Atherton looks like.
Oh,
and so I tried to find you on social media and you are not there.
Oh yeah. Off grid, baby. Off grid.
Yeah. He's a lot like Ryan Gosling. I wonder why your brother split up with her. Well, maybe it was opinions like that he just thought, she's so off base that I can't be around this person. Incredible.
I mean, a mixture between Ryan Gosling and Edward Norton, if you will, Matthew. Just imagine those two had a child.
Wow.
And maybe a bit of Paul McKenna, I'll give you that.
Oh my God. Oh, I'm trying to think where I can get a picture up quickly and send it to Matt. Oh, my God. Well, while I look for a picture of Jamie, why don't we talk? Why don't we begin? Oh, one more thing. Your guest was superb. Idle was brilliant. If you've not listened to the previous podcast, really, really interesting to hear a podcast where someone who knows what they're talking about is talking.
She was all right. You know, let's not go crazy.
She was great. I mean, remove that from the podcast. It would be like, removing Nicholas Lyndhurst and David Jason from Only Fools and Horses. That's essentially the role she played on the last podcast. She was brilliant, absolutely brilliant and interesting. And my favourite moment, which went unargued by Matthew Wanless and Jamie Atherton because they were intimidated by her feminist stronghold, was when she actually drew a line between Yvonne Strahovski's character in Chuck and her character in The Handmaid's Tale.
You mentioned this on the text messages, and I couldn't really remember what it was.
I did wonder whether you hadn't heard her say it. She literally said that she didn't literally say it. She basically said that the two characters were the same empowering figure in different scenarios, that she plays this underlying, unobtainable strength beneath a beautiful surface, and it's unobtainable, and it's difficult, and the situation that she finds herself in, both although different genres, are correct. So she didn't she likes those bikinis. She thinks that's the empowerment of that character. I'm glad that's been put to bed, and I'm even more, the only thing I was ashamed of, I was disappointed with, was that she kind of apologized for being a fan of Chuck at first, because she wanted to be cool. I would say to her, stick to your guns. Yes, you're right, clearly Chuck is the greatest, like, TV series.
It must be like working for Donald Trump. Like, just hears exactly what he wants to hear. It doesn't doesn't matter what's actually said.
I don't think you two even heard her when she was talking about that bit. But I urge you to go back.
I missed it. Yeah,
I must admit, I didn't listen to her an awful lot. I was doing a Sudoku.
Well, in all credit to both of you, it really is an excellent podcast, and you should listen to it. I listened to it while I was doing the ironing, and it was brilliant. I didn't want it to end, apart from when you two guys were talking. So well done. Brilliant stuff. This week, we're going to talk about the return of Black Mirror. We're going to discuss a little bit of Easy. Confession Tapes is back with the second series on Netflix. And Killing Eve, I am walking through. So we're going to be careful on spoilers on all of these, because I know that they're quite fresh. Why don't we go to... Let's start at the dull end of stuff with Matthew Wanless. Easy is the name of the series. You texted us and said if you can watch Easy before the podcast, it'd be great. And I went to it, and I know that there's new stuff, but I presume that it's okay with you that I went back and watched the first episode of season one.
Yeah, I think it's the weakest episode of the whole show.
Oh.
Which is not to say that it's bad, but I think the better stuff lies ahead.
Okay, and am I to understand that every episode is a different cast? It's a different story every time?
Not entirely. I think certainly in the first series, at least one character from the previous episode shows up at some point in the next one, mm-hmm. even if it's just for a brief moment. Like, in fact, in that very first episode, the girl who's babysitting for them is the main focus of episode two, I think.
Yeah, I noticed that, yeah.
Yeah. And then as you get further into it, characters start to cross over and things like that. But anyway, I don't want to get too bogged down in the
give us a brief synopsis of what the show's about, and
Well, I mean, that's a tricky one, because it doesn't have a kind of focal point in the same way that a lot of stuff does. As you might have gathered from what we were saying before, there is no kind of follow-through narrative to the show. It's not one person's story, and the stories that, even though the characters cross over, the stories are not related. If anything, I would say the show is about kind of the city of Chicago and the people of Chicago.
Oh.
And
I did watch
Say that again.
I did watch the right series, didn't I? This a couple in the first episode with their sex.
That's
life.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
When I say it's about the people of Chicago, it's just like taking random stories from. And the only thing that links them all is the fact that they happen in the same city.
Okay.
Like each character set that you've seen will return. Like the couple that you met in episode one, I think they have another two episodes devoted to them in series one,
okay.
And then a couple more in series two, and then a couple more in series three. But it is not a story with a beginning, middle, and end. It's like, it's just little sort of episodes from people's lives.
Mm-hmm.
And it's shot in a kind of, it was shot beautifully. I think sometimes it looks really nice, but it's shot very basically, and without a lot of kind of there's no trappings to it how it's shot, and it's acted and written in a kind of, it's heavily improvised.
Mm-hmm.
And that really shows, because it,
well, I didn't quite notice that, I've got to say, it didn't stand out in the,
like I say, in the first episode, I don't think it's quite hit its stride. As soon as you watch another episode or two, you're going to see it.
Right.
I was about to say, because I definitely noticed it really felt improvised, and that is a criticism as well. I'd say from me.
Do you think I really enjoy that style?
Well, I do, but I felt like I was, you know, when you, it just felt like it was either bad improvising or it was too improvised. The style, because it took me out of what I was watching, and I felt like I was just watching an actor, a couple of actors improvise, talking around a subject at times. It just, it overpowered the story at times, especially the second episode, which is the girl who hooks up with the other girl after a gig and tries to become a vegan.
Vegan Cinderella. Yeah, is that, that was the episode. Actually, I'm interested you say that, because that was the episode that made me think, oh, man, I really like this.
Oh, really?
Oh. You didn't like that episode?
No, I didn't. I kind of liked the one. The first one I didn't mind as much. It was sort of the couple's dynamic was quite interesting. But I just don't like the... I don't like that director, Joe Swanberg, who's the creator. Mm. I've seen a couple of his films, and I'm not a massive fan of his style of filmmaking. I just feel it's overly improvised. I just feel it's too much improvised, and it's too much look at us improvising. Look at all these brilliant
improvisers. It didn't stand out to me as the in the because in the post office thing, I've found some that I think there's a couple of styles of improvisation that I'm sick of now. One is the office style improvisation, and which is like the, yeah, you know, whether you add things to the end of the sentence to point out that you are being ironic, where you're like, well, that would be, I don't know, say something arrogant and then go, so, and it's just an awkward silence. It really annoys
me. Which office are you referring to?
The Office, starring Ricky Gervais. I'm saying
that wasn't improvised.
No, but there's that style has, what? Was it not improvised at all?
No.
Oh, well, that style of comedy seems to have spread, and there's a bit of it. And then the style of...
I mean, sorry, to say it's not improvised, they definitely did different takes of things and chucked in a couple of extra words. Certainly Ricky Gervais did.
Okay.
But on the documentary, they say one of the strengths of the script is that it sounds improvised.
Okay. And then at the other end of the scale, there's the Will Ferrell style, which when Anchorman came out was so refreshing. But now you just know that they've done 20 takes trying to say something more and more bizarre. You know, like when they insult, like when in the original Anchorman, when Brick's going, I love lamp and stuff. That was surprising, and it was therefore funny originally, and now it's kind of gone off the rails a bit, and Seth Rogen does it quite a lot. But with this one, there wasn't an obvious style to the improvisation that didn't, like, it didn't irk me. I didn't feel like I'd seen it before. But there was certainly something about the whole thing that I was a little bit lukewarm about, and that might be the reason why.
Interesting. I mean, how much did you watch, Jamie? Just those first two?
Just the first two, yeah.
Yeah, I only did one, okay. So...
Mm-hmm. I would... If you can bear it, I would love for you to watch a couple more, because I've watched the whole thing now, and I really like the stuff that is going on in it. Like I think in terms of, I don't know how to say this without sounding like a wanker, but like it deals with a lot of sort of subcultural stuff. Yeah. The second episode that Jamie's watched, Vegan Cinderella, is almost entirely women in it. And then there's a lot of kind of alternative, I'm not very au fait with terminology, but there's a lot of kind of alternative sexuality explored in it, from kind of open relationships, and there's a bit of S&M in some of it as well. It's just sort of very progressive subject matter.
Okay.
And everyone's really fucking cool in it, and really kind of level-headed, and I like the conversational styles in it. It comes across as reasonable people,
yeah,
and doing sort of interesting stuff. It's just like I say, it's a very hard one to pin down, but like watch the Marc Maron episode that's in I think it's 4 or 5 in series 1.
Oh, cool.
Okay.
Maron's in it.
And have you ever seen Happiness?
Yes.
Todd Solondz film. You know Joy in that film, the one who's in the scene at the beginning with John... what the hell's his name?
Riley. No.
No. The guy who says, "You think I'm shit? I'm champagne." John Lovitz. Yeah. I can't think of the actress's name, but she's in that episode as well, and she's so good and so funny, and Mark Maron's excellent.
All right.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I tell a lie. I did accidentally watch episode, because when I started Netflix, it started episode one of season three for some reason. I think cause it's a new series. Has Netflix taken it over? Is that what's happened?
It was a Netflix original, I believe. I'm not sure.
Right. Well, anyway, I started watching season three, episode one is the same couple from season one, episode one. It's their story again.
But that's when they're into the open relationship thing, aren't they?
Yeah, and actually, I thought that episode was really good as well. Maybe that's why I liked the first, because that was the first one I watched, and then I went back and watched the other two.
Right, so
I do recognise that there is some goodness in there. It might be just that, and when you get anthology series like these, like with Inside Number 9, or even Black Mirror, which we're going to talk about.
Yeah.
They can be quite hit and miss, can't they?
Yeah, well, it's just harder to attach your colours to to that mast, isn't it? Because there's just not the same through lines. And
they definitely are, but I think with those other two that you mentioned, they never return to the characters. No. Yeah. And so when I said there's no overarching narrative, that's not strictly true. Like the one that starts in episode three with... why can't I think of anyone's name? Who's the guy who's in 127 Hours? James Franco. His brother is in it. Tony Franco, I think.
Dave Franco.
I just make it up. It's Tony Franco.
But point made. Maybe we'll stick with it. But it is like a book. It's that feeling of having a book of short stories where you think, I'm probably going to...
Thank you very much.
Well, it's been very long so far, Matthew.
Hold on a second.
16 minutes, Matthew, is your point so far. Carry on.
This is a good show and people should watch it. But that story has a proper arc to it, where it's about these two brothers who start a brewing company together, and then the ups and downs that happen within that. And it's really good. It's a really good show. It's one of the, it's a good thing.
And which one's that? That's the new series. In the new series, that one, is it?
No, it starts in series one and finishes in series three.
No, I'm saying the story about those guys, the one that you just said is really good.
Yes, I am referring to that as well.
Oh, right.
I'm saying the whole thing is good. That actually isn't my favourite story, but that one is one that has a complete narrative to it.
Right, and it's spread over the three series at various points.
Yeah, so it's like four or five episodes.
Okay.
Well, I'll stick with it till Mark Maron's episode and see if I get into it.
Hey, did either of you guys watch Happy? The first series of Happy.
Yes, I did.
And the second one's on the way.
Do you know what that is?
Yeah, we should talk about that. Maybe if you can check it out, Matt. It's a very different thing. Patton Oswalt plays an imaginary friend in it, and that's all you need to know.
Oh, I like him.
Yeah. Just check it out. It's weird and great.
Also, while we're just on the subject of what we should be watching for future pods, can we all watch Barry at some point? Because I've just watched an episode of Barry that is one of the best bits of TV I've seen this year.
What's
it was amazing. It's on Sky Atlantic, so it might be on Now TV.
Okay. Who's in it?
But it's got Bill Hader in it.
Oh, yeah.
And he's an assassin who tries to become an actor. And it honestly, like, it gets better and better. It's really, really good. It's a dark comedy. They're only like 20 minutes long each episode, 30 minutes long.
Here's a pointless football-like show stat for you. Barry gets 8.3 out of 10 on IMDb, and 93% of Google users like it. Happy, that I was just talking about, gets exactly the same scores. Isn't that
I tell you what. You know what? It makes me hate all this kind of numerical stuff that we get easy. Is roundly booed.
Is it? Well, I can see why. Yeah,
it averages about a 7, I'd say. The episode, some of the episodes,
6.8 on IMDb, 80% Google users. It's not bad. It's not bad. 90% on Rotten Tomatoes.
I think that
has
no reflection on the quality of the programme. I think it's a really good show.
No, particularly with comedies. Rotten Tomatoes, anything related to comedy, never look at Rotten Tomatoes scores. They always get 4% or something. Anyway, good. So, well, let's switch
By
to
the way, before we move on to another section,
yes.
Howell has sent me a picture of Jamie.
Of us in a helicopter.
Yeah.
And I am shocked.
Say it.
This is just nowhere near where I thought you would land. This is absolutely not what I thought I was going to be
looking
at.
What did you think he would look like?
Ryan not this.
To compare the image you had in
honestly,
your head
honestly, I thought Jamie
disappears.
Would be about three times the size of the person I'm looking at.
I know, it's my deep, girthy voice that
it
gives
me
extra weight.
It is.
Yeah,
based on their voices, if you'd never seen Matt and Jamie, you would probably pair them with each other's body, which is odd.
That is interesting. Yeah, that actually probably is about accurate. Yeah.
So Ryan Gosling.
I don't think I sound as big as I am.
You think he looks like Ryan Gosling, there, Matt?
Wouldn't have been my first go-to, but now that I'm looking at it, maybe without the headphones.
Squint.
I've never seen Ryan Gosling with headphones on. That's
well, that's it. Howell gave you a duff picture.
That's us in a helicopter. That's us flying a helicopter there. Ah, the glory days.
Ever seen Ryan Gosling fly a helicopter either? So it's very hard to put this in the correct context.
There you go. All right. While we're dealing with collections of short stories, let's whip on to the new series of Black Mirror. I've not seen many Black Mirrors, and let's not get lost in the back catalogue. Let's talk about these new ones. One of them stars our good friend Moriarty. Matt, can you do an impression?
Oh, Moriarty,
and he's got that voice as well, which is good. His genuine Irish voice. I forget his name. One stars Miley Cyrus, and
Andrew Scott is the actor you're looking for.
Andrew Scott, and one stars the guy who was in something and is very good, and I don't know the name of. But it's an all-star.
He's in the Hurt Locker. He's in the Avengers.
That's right, the Avengers.
The actor's name.
It's an all-star series. It's now, you know,
Anthony Mackie.
There you go.
Charlie Brooker is the darling of Hollywood at the moment, and everybody wants to be in Black Mirror. And this is showing that. I thoroughly enjoyed all three of these episodes. So I'm interested to hear if you two didn't, really.
Well, I think what was nice was coming off the back of Bandersnatch, which, did you guys watch Bandersnatch?
No.
I don't think so.
No, well, that's really dark and almost like to the point where it was too much, and even the multiple choice, I tried to watch it and couldn't.
Didn't have the right TV, yeah.
I'm just referring a little bit back to the last series as well. There was a lot of dark episodes in the last series that I didn't really enjoy, but there were some great ones as well, like the Star Trek episode is brilliant. And this felt more along those lines. It was like, it was a cautionary tale, but it wasn't completely dark, the ending, was it? All three of them aren't completely dark endings, and I like that. I like that this was looking at society, but also not completely going, and we're going to shit. You know, it was sort of, there's an element of like, it just kept it kept you upbeat, and all the stories seemed to end on a little bit of a high, which was really good, actually.
Yeah, and if you've seen the episode of Black Mirror, San, what's it called, won all the awards.
San Junipero,
whatever it is. There's a sort of through line with that one. There's a similar little gadget used in both, and it's nice that he returns to stuff like that without fear of going, oh well, we've done that before. You can hear that being argued.
Is that the virtual reality thing?
Yeah, but it's used in a very different way, although the device is really similar. And it's nice that that's not been committed out of being used again, you know, which might happen at other networks and stuff. So it's a completely different use of it. Essentially, it's just the same prop, which is nice. But yeah, I enjoyed that a lot. I thought Miley Cyrus's episode was very good. I would say she was a very good actress. I would also say she was a little bit too mean when in the latter half of it, maybe.
Can I just mention, I've only seen the Anthony Mackie one.
Oh, okay.
Right. Yeah.
Andrew, what's his face? Moriarty. I mean,
he was Adam Scott, isn't he?
Brilliant.
It was Andrew Scott.
Andrew Scott,
there is a speech in that, without ruining anything for Matt, there is a speech in that that is one of the best delivered monologues on screen that I've seen, I think.
He is very good. Like, I've seen him in... Moriarty was obviously the big role, and I liked him in that, but since then, seeing him in Pride and in Fleabag and then this... He's very good, isn't he? He is really, really good actor.
Yeah, just complete.
I thought he was excellent in Fleabag, and I really enjoyed his scenes with her. I thought they were amazing.
Yeah, what a great character, you know.
I loved, sorry to go back to Fleabag, but the bit where he was scared of foxes.
Yeah, it's funny.
Was just so funny.
Yeah.
So good.
That's where her writing is just so brilliant and inventive, you know. It's just lovely stuff.
Yeah, it is excellent. The episode is called Fighting Vipers.
Yeah,
that I watched,
the first one. Yeah,
I'm not sure what I thought about it. I really like the concept.
What is this? The very first episode of Black Mirror.
No, the virtual reality one from this series.
Oh, okay.
The Street Fighter episode where they end
up.
Yeah, I really like that idea.
Mm-hmm. I loved it. I like when it happens, I was pissing myself. It was brilliant. I thought it was really well done.
I thought that whole part, like the stuff in the real world was pretty well done. But then all of the stuff in the game I thought felt really trashy and crap.
But don't you think that was not the style of the? What do you mean?
I would agree with Matt in that it's not trashy and crap enough to have been a purposeful decision to be trashy and crap. The way that they performed the in-game stuff felt not stylized enough. Almost it kind of didn't do its job.
It felt like it was either totally phoned in or it just kind of didn't work.
I just kept thinking they cast this very quickly. They cast two good-looking people who could also fight a bit. It felt like you could have got better.
No, the performances of the virtual reality characters were a little bit... They were a little bit...
But I think that the...
Yeah, cheesy.
It just let
the thing down a bit. It took me out of it completely. I was just like, this is rubbish. What's happened here?
But the metaphor was brilliant. There's a big problem around people living online, and especially around pornography and expectations for young people and all of that stuff. But also the fact that, you know, I get the screen updates and says, you have spent an average of 4 hours a day on your phone. I'm like, I didn't think I used it that much. There is a real issue with. I heard David Baddiel say something on Radio 4, which was like the challenge millennials have got is that they think something doesn't have any meaning unless it's online. So if something amazing happens, that has to be put online quickly for it to have meaning.
But hang on, what was the thing that you took from this?
The story is about what happens if you get sucked into a virtual relationship with somebody, and that then kills real relationships if you have too much of it. So it ends up being a treat. It ends up being you can do something one day a year.
Did you think that was what it was? I didn't get... I can see that that's in there, but I didn't think that was the central thrust of it in the end.
Well, that's exactly what the central thrust was. What's wrong with you, man?
No, it ends with them... I don't think that was. It was that they were... It was about a new way of being with someone. And I didn't see it as an... I mean, obviously there was an addictive quality to it sense that this was better than anything else that was happening. Mm. But it was more who it was happening with and how it was happening that was interesting.
Yeah, I agree with Matt. Yeah.
It didn't seem just like a straight up I can't pull away from this because it's addictive thing. It wasn't like...
That's what the whole plot was. It was the snowball of that. And the final scene is them saying, you can do this one day a year. It's like a gambling addict getting addicted to gambling and not being able to operate in reality anymore.
I think you're right in a way, Howell, that it was... But I think what the central thing I took from it was that these people who were best friends in this other world... They were attracted to each other in these other world, in these other kind of avatar world they could live in. Is how relationships can differ in different environments and in different kind of identities.
Yeah, but I think that's the catalyst.
When they met up in the real world and tried it, it was like, we have to give this a go. And because there was definitely a thing about the sexual borders they were crossing as well, because it was obviously two guys whose relationship was very much not based in that world.
Yeah.
And then finding a place for it to be like that, and then there being something special about that. It wasn't that it was dangerous and addictive, although obviously it did have a detrimental effect on his relationship with his wife. Yes. But in the end, they worked past that, and then they kind of figured out a way to integrate both rather than it being wholly a negative thing.
Well, yes, which is the nature of controlling any kind of addiction. That you go, well, that's allowed in very small doses, otherwise it takes over
your
life.
Not really the case, actually. I mean, like with gamblers and alcoholics, they don't ever recover from addiction.
Yes, that's true.
You know, they go teetotal. They cut it out of their lives entirely.
Yes,
because
that's true.
Because they're addicts.
Yeah, but this is a message to us. This is a message to how do we manage the luxury and the enticement of what is a simplistic online world. So and once that becomes real, you realize that that's not what you thought it was. It's not a replacement for real life, and that's surely the entire point. Otherwise they would have, if it was about, okay, well, Jamie and I could technically have sex with each other online because,
oh, why is it us two?
Because we know each other very well.
Choose Matthew.
I wouldn't. Even if you look like that. But, you know, and it's like, yes, there are appealing things about that, and therefore we would have similar interests and all of that. But if in reality that had to play out, it wouldn't be worth it. That's, I mean, you're just insane if you don't think that that's the whole point. Idiots.
I think you've looked at it on a very surface level. I don't think you've gone all the way down. Yeah.
Yours is the surface. Yours is they fancy each other. If you were right, the conclusion would have been that actually he should be married with him. It's the fact that, you know, for them, that gayness is not allowed, and now they've realised that that's the true love, and therefore they would have ended up living with each other, not being able to see each other one night a year.
I think the fact that they met up and they felt like they had to know meant something different to that. It was like they wanted to understand whether this was a real thing or a false thing, rather than something that they just couldn't do.
It's not that what you're saying is wrong, how they wasn't part of it. I think Matt's right. The main thing was identity and how we build identities, and then you're taken out of that environment, and suddenly barriers that you'd never even dream of crossing with a person in a relationship go away, and there's something different, you know, can be possible. I think that was the major part of the episode. It wasn't that what you saying wasn't there as well, although I think a lot more of what you're talking about was actually in episode two, without giving anything away to Max. You've not watched it yet, but there's a lot of that in episode two with the Andrew Scott. So
I mean, it's hard for me to say that you're completely wrong, because obviously all of those are included, and it would be impolite to say so, but I'm almost certain that if we Googled it, the first write-up or interview would be about porn addiction. 100%. That's fine.
Well, anyway, good thing you took.
Well, listeners, what do you think?
Email us. What do you think? studio@theboxsetpod.com. Are Matt and Jamie were they just so keen to live out the fantasy of getting together online and leave their wives that they turned it into that, thinking about how much they would have a better relationship if one was a woman? Let us know if you agree with that statement. studio@theboxsetpod.com. What else are we just going to... Oh, Killing Eve. So, she's no longer... Phoebe Waller-Bloss is no longer...
Phoebe Waller-Bloss.
Yes. She's no longer adapting the books. Somebody else is doing it. She's now an executive producer. Has the quality dropped in season two? Let's go to Jamie.
Well, I don't really want to compare that. I wish I didn't know that she hadn't been working on season two.
Well, pretend like you didn't.
I did find,
do you think it's better?
I did find, no, but I found out during the series that it was that she wasn't working on it anymore. Mm-hmm. And until she wasn't, I hadn't noticed that the writing had dipped in quality. But I think the problem now with series two is that series one came out of nowhere. It surprised everybody. It was just, it was brilliant, refreshing, different. And it just shocked us with this kind of, oh, where the hell's this show come from feel. And this series had a lot more expectation on it. We wanted to know what was going to happen. We wanted to get back into that world. And I feel like that was always going to slightly disappoint. I feel like the problem with series two is that it takes a lot of the same plot journeys or tries to go down the same road that the first series goes down.
Mm-hmm.
Which is always going to be a problem. So it's still good. Like, I've watched it all now, and I recommend watching it, but it didn't leave me as compelled. I wasn't like watching it and going, I need to watch the next episode. Like with series one, I had to watch every single episode as quickly as I could. And this one felt more like, okay, let's go back. And then I enjoyed it while I was there, but not to the same kind of extent.
Yeah,
just the same.
Yeah, I'm the same. I don't think it fizzles in the way that Phoebe obviously made it fizzle. You know,
I don't know if it's her. I don't know if that's her missing that's the problem.
Oh,
I
do. I think.
Do you think it's?
Yeah. For example, what's the name? What's the name of the woman in
it? I've only seen episode one. Just so we know.
Okay. There's a couple of cameos in there, and it feels like they just don't hit the mark. And it's hard to not hit the mark when you've got a big name, unless the writing isn't quite as good. And she should have this cameo I'm talking about. She really should have been much more impressive than she actually was. It just doesn't like you say. I mean, what else can it be that doesn't make you want to jump onto the next episode? Because Jodie Comer is still a brilliant actress, and Sandra Oh is still annoying, in my opinion. Matt, what did you think?
Like I say, I've only watched the first episode, but I thought it was good. I wasn't that dazzled by the first series. Mm-hmm. I came to it quite late, and I thought it was good. I thought it got better as, I don't know. I liked parts of it, but I didn't think it was particularly special.
Yeah.
And so,
which you should.
I mean, I didn't know that that Phoebe Waller-Bridge wasn't writing series two, and I was kind of hoping that there would be a Fleabag like step up in quality, because I really enjoyed series one of Fleabag, but I thought series two was incredible.
Yeah.
And now I'm sort of wondering whether I should bother with series two of Killing Eve.
There's still some lovely moments, because like I said, I think Jodie Comer's so good, and the source material is still so strong that the actual plot turns and stuff are still very good. It's just really just doesn't have that Phoebe fizzle, which we get out of, like you say, you know, the step up of season two, but also the first series of Fleabag, first series of Killing Eve. It felt so refreshing and different, and continues to feel so when she's writing. When she's not writing, I no longer feel that we're going up a league, you know. But yeah.
Yeah, but did you know that did you know that before you started watching it, Howell?
No, I don't think so. I saw it on the credits, and I don't know whether it was the beginning of the credits or the end credits, but I instantly went, I'm pushing harder than I need to here to try and enjoy it.
I just worried that when we find out immediately, she's not writing, but okay, it's going to be shitter. Like, that's your prejudice is already set in place, because you know that.
I'm all for it. If you know, I was never somebody who said that the last two series of The West Wing were awful, or everything post Aaron was awful. I loved the last two series of West Wing. It's great. If something's good, it's good. Oh, by the way, to Metro newspaper, Charlie Brooker talking about that episode and explaining it, says, I think there's definitely a porn analogy going on. The big spanner in the works is they're not quite sure who they are in a way, and what they mean to each other and how to express it. That's where you can communicate. We were sort of thinking of similar tech to San Junipero, but thinking of things like porn, and an analogy for that hopefully isn't too grubby. So porn and porn is mentioned by Charlie Brooker.
Read the second sentence again.
I've just closed it. Sorry.
Okay.
Yeah,
that's good. So good.
You'll have to Google it.
Well done. Well done, Trump.
Just Google it. I think that's it for tonight. Have we missed anything?
A quick word for on Chernobyl. Have you guys watched it?
Yes, watched it all. Obviously, this was the dinner party. This was the coffee table chatter in every household up and down the country. Have you seen Chernobyl? It's excellent. Does everybody agree with that, Matthew?
I really enjoyed it, yeah. It's been slightly tainted by having so many...
so many people like watch Chernobyl.
No. The conversation goes, have you seen Chernobyl? Did you like it? Ah, well, here's everything that's wrong with it.
Oh, I haven't heard that. What's wrong with it?
Because just Google the TV show. You'll find a million takedown articles talking about the things in it that are factually inaccurate and sometimes dangerously so.
Well, that'd be the Russians. That'd be the Russians interfering with the internet, though, won't it?
No, it's a lot of Americans. And there are people who are particularly talking about its misrepresentation of people who have been exposed to high levels of radiation being somehow contagious, right, which is apparently completely untrue. And also some of the effects of the radiation that you see in the show. Like, there's a moment in the first episode where a guy's leg, just you see this horrible shot of his leg and his clothes suddenly just soak with blood from underneath it. It's a really shocking moment, and both Hannah and I went, oh man, and that would never happen. And there's just lots of things in it which have been, you know, I mean, you expect this, it's a drama, but because it's dealing with something that did happen and is purporting to tell the hidden story behind this thing, it does kind of, you know, take its knees out a little bit to have those articles come up so quickly and just be like, this didn't happen, that didn't happen, this is untrue. Like, you know, the moment, in case anyone hasn't seen it at all and doesn't want it to be spoiled, I'm about to say something that spoils things. There's a moment in, I think it's episode 2 or 3, where a helicopter is trying to dump a sand on top of the explosion, mm-hmm, and it is caught in the cloud and then drops down and crashes. Mm-hmm. Didn't happen, right. Wouldn't happen. And it's just a little bit disappointing to hear that. After enjoying a show, you go into work and say, oh, is anyone watching Chernobyl? And someone says, look at this article. It's all fucking bullshit. But the thing that struck me about it, because obviously we all lived through this, mm-hmm, is how close it came to being so much worse. And like the stuff they were talking about where the... if the water tanks had exploded, and the effect that would have had on most of the Eastern Bloc and pretty much the entirety of Russia. You know, that nearly happened.
Yeah, I mean, they had to either cull or, you know, fence off a load of sheep in the Lake District because they got radiation when Chernobyl happened. Came a long way, small doses of it.
Really?
Yeah.
I know he got as far as Wales, didn't it? I remember those stories about in Wales about it. Yeah,
you might. That wasn't to do with something in the UK.
No, that was Chernobyl. I mean, it was a lot of radiation in the air and high.
It wasn't Sellafield.
Nope.
Okay, all right. Interesting. I didn't know that.
Oh well, according to my dad, that's true, and he's pretty accurate on most of these things.
I mean, I didn't know a lot about this. It was really eye opening, and I thought that.
Yeah.
Well, that's the interesting thing about Jared Harris.
Sorry, what did you say?
Oh, no, that's the interesting thing about it. Is it's almost like, well, you don't really know anything about Chernobyl. And when somebody says that, I first of all go Chernobyl, and then I say, yeah, you feel like you do know a lot about it because it's such a touch point in history. And yet, no, there's hardly been anything said or done about it. And it almost, you know, I'm just looking at one of the articles that are critical of it that's quite detailed. And in all those examples you gave and stuff, I think there's far more left out of normal biographies and other true stories for the sake of drama. For example, the female character, you know, she's boiled down. But they pointed that out. I heard that this guy researched, like 10 years this writer spent researching this to try and get it right. So, you know, I kind of don't have an issue. I prefer the fiction quite often, and as long as it's not changing the overall truth, which is The Russians say that 30 people died in Chernobyl. Okay, let's talk about that. And I was talking to a guy.
No, I don't have an issue with creative license. I just want to make that clear. But like one of the articles I read talks about how in Japan and I can't remember the other place, but radiation sickness sufferers were treated like lepers. Because of a mistaken belief about the potential effects of passing it on. And so I think that misrepresentation is potentially dangerous.
Well, apart from the fact that it's true that that's what they would have thought at the time, you know, the nurses would have been saying, keep away. And in fact, the film says the child was born and it lived and it was absolutely fine, you know. So it's telling a story of what they will have done at that moment. So don't go anywhere near him. And,
no, the film doesn't say the child was born and lived. It says she subsequently had a child.
And they it says she had a child and they said that it wouldn't last longer than a week or whatever. And it's fine. I'm pretty sure.
That's not the case. The baby was born and survived for 4 hours.
Did it? Is that what it said?
Yeah.
I thought it was a happy ending with that one.
No, they said she would never have kids again, but then she did. So,
oh, that's the one. There you go. But yeah, anyway, I am pretty sure that that stuff is definitely what they would have done at the time. And then what do you want? A caption on the screen that says this is not scientifically correct. I don't know.
Okay. All right, fine.
Well, would you? How would you do it different? I mean, That's her story, was the pain of not being able to, of being shouted at for not touching her dying husband.
Yeah. There's a shot in it where someone touches someone else's skin and their hand burns.
Ah, okay. And that wouldn't happen immediately after, like when someone's literally, you know, baking with radiation.
I'm not going to pretend to be an expert. From what I've read, no.
Go and study nuclear physicism.
Can't become radioactive.
Okay, fair enough. Jamie, what were you going to say?
No, I was going to say, just talking about the overall, I mean, there are inaccuracies, but I mean, I just took it as like, yeah, Chernobyl's like this touch point in our lives, and we all grew up with it kind of as a, you know, a word or a... or an event that we knew very little about. And it was just really fascinating actually finding that. And there's so many more documentaries now on like Netflix and Amazon that are trying to catch on to the Chernobyl effect. It's really funny. But yeah, very good. Very
and
well
what's
made.
His name, Jared?
I don't think it deserves to be top rated on IMDb, but I mean, that's a different story.
No, again, there's a bit of, you know, real life and real drama can bump things up quite a way on the old ratings. But yeah. I think Jared,
it won't be in a few months as well. It's like, it's so weird to have that as your claim to fame about 5 minutes after something comes out.
Isn't it, though? That really annoying. Like, everyone's going, but you know, it's on IMDb, it's 9.7.
But the scale that you're measuring on only goes up to 9.7. You need to get the proper measure out of the cupboard in the other building.
Oh.
Thanks. What was I going to say? Jared Thingy from Mad Men and this.
Excellent.
What a great actor. And that whole court speech that he does.
It's wonderful.
He delivers it so understatedly, which allows him to get through that amount of information. He's like the best teacher ever because he doesn't try and stress or drag you along. He just delivers it. And it's so well written.
Yeah, that's what I was saying in work the other day. It was like, I could listen to him talk about anything in there.
Yeah.
And have him explain complicated shit to me with that board and those things. It would be like, brilliant. Tell me about finance. Tell me about other shit that I don't understand.
Yeah, I'll understand it all. It's one of the problems I have with Brian Cox's stuff, because I love Brian Cox and I love what he's done. But when they make those programs, I find that almost because they've edited it together, I find that his voiceover is the same pace with the same careful explanatory tone throughout the entire hour. And as such, I begin to lose what he's saying, even though he's explaining it in the best way possible. Whereas what Jared did in that speech, he didn't stick with one tone. He would just give information and there'd be a pause whenever he wanted you to swallow something and he'd speed up. So it was just so natural. It just tripped off his tongue. I can't imagine preparing for a speech like that and being able to learn a speech like that. How long that must have taken. You've really got to
understand.
You're
not very talented, Howell.
I want Matt to deliver that speech next week. Next time on the podcast, Matthew Wanless explains.
Matthew Wanless does Jared Harris.
Yeah. That'll be great. No, I loved it. It was great. Very good. Very good. So, onwards, email us as ever. Do you agree? Is anyone out there hate Chernobyl and just go, oh, what the hell? Oh, I know what I was going to say. I met a guy the other day who's as smart as a nuclear physicist and is now retired but works from an American company. And in the last few years of the job, they started working with a Chinese company. And there was a really similar thing. I said to him, have you seen Chernobyl? He goes, no. There was a really similar thing with the communist approach, which was, he said, it's really strange because you would say to them, was the test successful? And they'd say, yes, the test was successful. And then you'd ask for the details, and the test wasn't successful at all. But the projection of confidence and supremacy overrides anything to do with the details. And it wasn't that it was impossible to work with them. It was just you don't, that they would class a failed test as successful. We have done it correctly. Meaning, yes, we completed the test, you know. Just really, really different mindset in terms of that ability to say anything that doesn't fundamentally feed into the theory that the country is better than everybody at everything. And anything that goes against that, you better look out. Look out! It's not like Britain, bunch of cynical, whinging bastards. Bye. I feel like I've just put Matt and Jamie asleep. It's good to be back. It's good to be back. Let's get Idle back.
Sort of phase out there and just start imagining what I might be eating in a short while.
Well, here's what I would suggest in the coming couple of weeks is Matt and Jamie, don't listen back to this episode. Listen back to the one that you did last week because it'll make some...
I have listened back to it once.
Oh,
but,
God, yeah. Tuned out even then. He was on it and listened to it.
God. Well, no, it's clearly one of those things where you've heard a couple of words in a sentence while you were doing something else and decided that was what was said.
I knew that I had to bring a clip. I knew that I should bring a clip. It just couldn't be accepted that Idle was right. Because once again, the feminist is mansplained to by a bunch of misogynist pigs. Good night. Thank you for listening. And we'll see you next time.
Yeah, that was a lovely parting shot there, Hal. That's great.
Hope you agree that the pace of this podcast has really rattled along tonight. Oh, God, 57 minutes. And it's time to go.
Yeah.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.